So I was standing in line at the grocery store the other day, and the card reader went down
Oh, no.
just for a minute. But in that minute, the entire store just froze. People couldn't pay. The inventory system stopped tracking. The little loyalty points didn't ping. It was such a tiny glitch, but it just reminded me of how incredibly fragile all our daily systems really are. We rely on this invisible global tether for everything: our money, our communication, our power.
Yeah, that's a whole just-in-time trap, isn't it? We've optimized the entire world for efficiency, but we stripped out all the redundancy.
All of it.
If a server in Virginia overheats, you can't unlock your smart door in California. If a shipping container gets stuck in the Suez Canal, a factory in Detroit just shuts down.
Exactly. And that fragility is the perfect jumping off point for today's deep dive.
It really is.
We're looking at a whole stack of documents here: white papers, strategic timelines, technical blueprints from late 2025 and early 2026 that propose a complete overhaul of that model. The concept is sovereign infrastructure.
And sovereign here doesn't really mean political borders. It means self-sufficiency. It's about building systems, internet, power, your local economy that keep working even if the rest of the world goes dark.
Now, the architect behind all this has a name that, I'll be honest, sounded a bit like a late-night infomercial pitch at first. Biz Builder Mike.
Right. You hear that and you expect a course on drop shipping or something.
Or how to flip real estate with no money down.
No.
But then you open the files, and it is not sales fluff. We're looking at military-grade edge, computing specs, plasma physics, advanced cryptography.
It's a huge contrast. The man behind the persona is Michael Knoll, and the ecosystem is called DeReticular.
So our mission today is to unpack how he's planning to combine things that really don't seem to go together, like supercomputers and hemp farming, to create resilient economies in places the global market just ignores.
And the core thesis here is really about rejecting what Noel calls the 1,000-mile failure model.
I love that term. So what does that actually mean?
It's the world we live in now. Your power comes from a plant hundreds of miles away. Your food travels 1,000 miles to get to your plate.
Your data is on a server on the other side of the continent.
Exactly. If any single link in that 1,000-mile chain breaks, you fail. So Noel's sovereign stack is all about bringing that down to 0 miles. Local power, local data, local food.
Okay, so let's get into the philosophy first, because there's a specific term that keeps popping up in these documents, and it seems to be the glue holding this whole kind of crazy plan together.
The Velcro principle.
Yes, the Velcro principle.
It's essential to understanding DeReticular. In our current economy, we function in silos. You have the energy sector over here, the agricultural sector over there, and the tech sector way over there.
Separate worlds.
They don't talk to each other,
Yeah.
and they certainly don't help each other. A farmer doesn't usually care what a data center is doing down the road. But the Velcro principle says that resilience comes from mashing these sectors together tightly. Like Velcro, you take the waste from one sector and make it the fuel for another.
Okay, give us the high-level example before we get into the weeds.
The classic example in Noel's model is heat. Data centers, the servers that run the internet, produce these massive amounts of heat.
Sure.
And usually, companies spend a fortune on air conditioning just to get rid of it. It's pure waste. But in the Velcro model, you stick that data center right next to a greenhouse. You pipe the heat into the greenhouse to grow food, and suddenly the waste becomes a resource.
And that mindset, that's what's driving this whole great repatriation idea he talks about.
It does. Repatriation usually refers to bringing money back home, but Noel's talking about data. For the last, what, 10 to 15 years, the trend has been the cloud. We send everything to AWS, Google, Microsoft. We just rent space on their computers.
And we trust them to keep it safe and accessible.
Which Noel argues is a huge mistake. He wants to move from the cloud back to bare metal.
Bare metal sounds a lot cooler, I have to admit. But what's the practical difference?
Bare metal just means the server is physically yours. It's sitting in your building, on your rack. You aren't renting a virtual slice of a machine in some hyperscale center. You own the hardware.
Right.
And this is totally central to his Project Unplugged. If you own the metal, you own the network. If the fiber cable to the outside world gets cut, your local AI, your local records, your local communication, it all keeps working. Because it's running on metal you can actually touch.
Okay, so that's the theory. Own the metal, Velcro the systems together. But I want to talk about the actual gear. Because looking at this hardware offensive timeline, this is not a standard server rack you'd find in a corporate office.
No, and that's a really critical distinction. The documents categorize infrastructure into two types: clinical and kinetic.
Clinical being what we have now.
Right. A traditional data center is a clinical environment. It's like a hospital operating room for computers.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly controlled temperature, zero dust, stable humidity.
Super fragile.
So fragile. If the AC breaks, the servers melt. If you open a window, the dust kills them.
And kinetic implies movement, chaos.
It implies reality. The real world is dirty, it's hot, and it vibrates. So the hardware diverticular is building. The RIOS, or Rural Infrastructure Operating System, is designed for these kinetic environments.
So we're talking about computers that can survive a sandstorm.
Literally. These units are built to handle dust, heat, ash, unstable power grids. They're designed to be dropped into rural Africa or a disaster zone or a farm and just work.
And they break it down into tiers.
Yes. And the one that really illustrates this best is Tier 1, the expeditionary tier.
This is the infrastructure in a suitcase.
It's the go bag for the digital age. 3 ruggedized Pelican cases, blue, yellow, and black. You have one case for satellite internet bonding, one for edge AI computing, and one for battery management.
The price tag was listed at what, $45,000 for the set? Which isn't cheap for a hobbyist, but for a village or a hospital.
For a remote clinic or a forward operating base, it's a steal. You drop these cases, open the latches, and you are your own ISP and data center. You don't need a building. You don't need a grid.
But this brings up a connectivity question. You mentioned satellite bonding, so I'm assuming Starlink.
Mostly, yes.
But if we are relying on Elon Musk's satellites, are we really sovereign? What happens if the satellites go down?
That is the big vulnerability with any satellite internet.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why Dereticular is pushing this new communication layer called WAMNet.
WAMNet. Wireless Ad Hoc Autonomous Massive Network. That is a mouthful.
It is. But the tech underneath it is fascinating. They're moving away from TCP/IP.
Okay, hold on. TCP/IP is the fundamental language of the internet. It's how everything connects. Why would you change it?
Think of TCP/IP like the postal service. To send a letter, you need an address, a specific location.
A where?
Right, a where. If the road to that house is blocked, the letter never arrives.
Okay.
WAMNet uses something called Named Data Networking, or NDN.
Mm-hmm.
In this model, you aren't asking for a where, you are asking for a what.
Give me an analogy.
Imagine you're in a crowded stadium, and you want to know the score of the game. In the TCP/IP model, you have to call the announcer's booth specifically. If that phone line is cut, you get nothing.
Right.
In the NDN model, you just shout to the people around you, what's the score?
And if the guy next to me knows, he just tells me.
Exactly. You don't care who tells you, as long as the information is verified. WAMNet creates a mesh where every device stores data. So if the internet backbone is cut, your phone can ask your neighbor's laptop for the data, which might have gotten it from a local server. The data just hops from device to device.
So the community is the network.
Precisely. It creates a digital bucket brigade.
Yeah.
And to physically make that happen, the hardware uses these Cat 18 LTE modems with intelligent eSIMs.
I saw that in the specs. These are not normal SIM cards.
No. They're designed to be carrier agnostic. They constantly hunt for a signal AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, whatever's available. If one tower goes down, the modem instantly switches to another provider. It is obsessed with maintaining that link.
So we've got the brain, the rugged RIOS servers, we've got the nervous system, the WAMNet mesh, but none of this works without a heartbeat. We need electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the transcript takes a hard left turn from computer science into agriculture.
It does feel like a strange pivot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But this is the Velcro principle coming right back into play.
Mm-hmm.
High-performance computing needs two things, massive power and massive cooling.
And usually that power is dirty, and the cooling consumes millions of gallons of water.
Right. Dereticular's answer is the carbon-consuming circular economy. They aren't plugging into the grid. They are building their own power plants using plasma gasification.
Plasma gasification sounds like something from science fiction. Is it nuclear?
No, it's not nuclear. It's a method of waste processing.
Mm-hmm.
You take organic matter, what they call weed stock, and you subject it to intense heat using plasma torches. But the key distinction here is that there is no oxygen involved.
You aren't burning the material.
Exactly. So it's not an incinerator. There's no smokestack belching out black smoke. Incineration burns things to ash. Gasification breaks the molecular bonds. It turns the solid matter into a gas.
Syngas.
Right, syngas, which is a mix of hydrogen and carbon monoxide.
And you can use that to generate electricity.
You can use it to run a turbine, or you can refine it into sustainable aviation fuel.
Mm.
But to run a power plant like this 24/7, you need a lot of feedstock. You can't just rely on, municipal garbage.
And that's where the hemp comes in.
Industrial hemp. The source material outlines this: 2 plantings, 3 harvests, daily model.
Wait, unpack that. You don't harvest a crop daily.
You do if you have a massive campus and you stagger the planting. The Kalbong blueprint talks about a 7,000-acre site. They are harvesting 30 acres of hemp every single day, year-round.
That is a logistical beast.
It's industrial-scale farming. But look at how it Velcros together. You harvest the hemp, the tops, the flowers are pressed for CBD oil. That's a high-value product you can sell globally.
So that pays the bills.
That pays the bills. Then the stalks, the biomass, go into the plasma gasifier. That creates the syngas to power the generators.
So the plant provides the medicine and the electricity.
And it creates byproducts. You get biochar and wood vinegar, which are incredible fertilizers. They go right back into the soil to help the next batch of hemp grow.
A closed loop.
A totally closed loop. But the most elegant part of it involves the CO2. Because even gasification releases some carbon.
Right? It has to.
It does. But instead of letting it escape into the atmosphere, they capture it. And because hemp loves CO2, they pipe that captured gas back into the fields or the greenhouses to boost crop growth.
Wow. So the waste from the power plant literally becomes food for the farm.
Exactly. It's carbon negative.
Yeah.
The hemp sucks carbon out of the air while it grows. The process captures it, and it goes right back into the cycle. And the electricity from that loop powers those Ryo servers we talked about earlier.
It's a fascinating vision. You have the hardware, the power, the agriculture all feeding each other. But there's a layer here we have to address, which is trust. If I'm buying green aviation fuel or ethical CBD from a facility in rural Uganda, how do I know it's actually green?
That is the trust layer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great blog post in the stack called The End of the Audit.
Which sounds a little ominous for accountants.
It is. The argument is that the global supply chain has a crisis of trust. Right now, if you want to prove your product is green, you hire a human auditor. They fly out, walk around with a clipboard, check some boxes.
I'll say, yep, looks good.
And humans are slow, they're expensive, and let's be honest, sometimes they can be bribed.
Of course.
So Noel's solution is automated trust
using
DLT digital ledger technology and NFTs.
Okay, hold on. We have to pause here. Because when our listeners hear NFTs, they usually think of, you know, expensive JPEGs of monkeys and crypto scams.
Yeah.
We need to clear the air on this.
Yes, please forget the monkeys. In this context, an NFT is just a digital container for data. It's a digital twin. Think of a barrel of sustainable aviation fuel produced at this plant.
Okay, I have the barrel.
The moment that barrel is filled, sensors in the factory automatically mint a token. That token contains all the data. The temperature of the gasifier when it was made, the batch number of the hemp used, the exact carbon capture metrics. It tracks that barrel from the moment it was a seed in the ground to the moment it's pumped into a plane.
So the product basically carries its own resume. You don't need the guy with the clipboard because the data is baked right in.
And because it's on a blockchain, it can't be faked or altered later. It's trustless, meaning I don't need to trust you. I just verify the data.
And this digital layer, it extends to the people working there too, doesn't it? I saw mentions of utility tokens for payroll.
Yes, and this is where the social impact comes in. Workers on these sovereign campuses are paid daily in local utility tokens via digital wallets.
Paid daily, that's almost unheard of in most industries.
It changes the dynamic completely. You work your shift, you get paid instantly. You can then spend those tokens at the campus clinic or buy food grown on the farm or pay for your housing.
Or exchange them for fiat currency.
Or you can exchange them. But it keeps the wealth circulating within that local community.
It really does sound like they are building a micronation.
That's the goal. In December 2025, they held a financial integration event where they demonstrated bridging real-world assets to the blockchain using CK-verified zero-knowledge proofs.
Real-world assets is the key phrase there. We aren't just trading crypto for the sake of crypto. We're trading energy, computing power, and food.
It anchors the digital value to something physical and essential. It makes the whole economy rugged.
So this is a grand vision. 7,000 acres, plasma torches, supercomputers, crypto economies. Is this actually happening anywhere, or is this just a very, very detailed simulation?
It is happening. The primary case study in these documents is the Kalbong Blueprint, which was released in August 2025. This focuses on the Karamoja subregion of Uganda, which they refer to as Node 4.
Why Uganda? Why not build this in, say, Nevada or Germany, where the infrastructure already exists?
Because of the leapfrog effect. In the West, we have legacy systems. We have an old grid, old regulations, massive corporations that fight change.
Right.
In a place like Karamoja, the infrastructure is lacking. They have a blank slate.
So they can skip the messy intermediate steps, like building coal plants? and go straight to this sovereign model.
Exactly. And the scale is massive. They're targeting 250 well-paid jobs per campus. And the goal, which is incredibly ambitious, is to establish 100 of these campuses by May 2027.
That would be 25,000 jobs.
And these aren't just factory jobs. The blueprint includes housing built with rammed earth technology, which uses compressed local soil plus schools with Web3-based education and digital-first healthcare.
The phrase sovereign nation ownership popped up in the documents. That felt really significant.
It's the most political part of the whole plan.
Mm.
This isn't about a Western corporation coming in, extracting resources, and sending the profits back to New York or London.
Yeah.
The explicit goal is for the local community to own the engine, to own the stack.
It's an inversion of the colonial model. Instead of extracting value, you are planting the means of production permanently.
That's the theory. And if it works, it proves that rural Africa can industrialize faster, cleaner, and more efficiently than the West ever did.
So where does this all stand right now? We're reviewing these sources from early 2026. Is the machine actually on?
As of the State of the Union from December 31st, 2025, Noel declared that the blueprint is dry.
Meaning the design phase is over.
The design phase is over. The hardware, those rugged Rios clusters, is in production. The entire focus for 2026 is execution.
I noticed a recurring call to action in the headers, Hack the Forge. What is that about?
That's their recruitment drive.
Uh-huh.
DeRoticular is taking over the code launch GTM Venture Forge. They're basically saying to the world, we built the hardware, we built the power plant, we built the network, now we need software.
They need apps that run on this new internet.
Right. If you're a developer and you have an idea for a decentralized ride-sharing app or a sovereign medical record system or a supply chain tracker, they want you to build it on their stack.
It's a fascinating ecosystem to watch. It really forces you to ask some hard questions. You know, we take for granted that the light switch works and the grocery store has food, but those systems are so long and thin and fragile.
And the sovereign infrastructure concept just asks, what if safety isn't about bigger armies or better insurance policies? What if true safety is simply owning your own power, your own data, and your own food source?
A question worth chewing on next time the Wi-Fi drops out and you feel that little panic set in. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us into the sovereign age.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Keep exploring, stay curious, and maybe start thinking about what your own sovereign stack might look like. We'll see you next time.